Now, just from that list, you might notice that in fashioning the world of Narnia, Lewis has woven together characters from different mythological traditions. Not only do we have stuff that's Judeo-Christian, but we have Greek, we have Norse, and we have Arthurian, and many more I haven't listed. Now, many of Lewis's critics did not like that. They thought it was sloppy and inconsistent. J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings, did not like The Chronicles of Narnia, which I find rather nasty almost, because Lewis was the one who encouraged Tolkien in his Lord of the Rings to get them published. But Tolkien, I mean, if you've ever read The Lord of the Rings, they are so systematic that anything is messy compared to J.R.R. Tolkien. But anyway, there are other critics too that felt it's a bit of a hodgepodge. But most of Lewis's readers, especially his fans, like that. They like that aspect that they get everything in a way when they read The Chronicles of Narnia. Let's come back to the plot. Once in Narnia, the children discover that Narnia is under the spell of the White Witch, and that, as a result, it is always winter and never Christmas. That's a line that comes up a lot in the novel. But the children also learn that the lion Aslan, the true king of Narnia and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea, is on the move. Aslan, by the way, is Persian for lion, Lewis explained in a letter he wrote to a child. As the novel progresses, a friendly family of talking beavers guides Peter, Susan, and Lucy to a meeting with Aslan, to sort of group. But Edmund leaves, because you see, earlier in the novel, Edmund had met up with the White Witch, and the White Witch had tempted the boy with her Turkish delights, which is a kind of candy. And to get more of those Turkish delights, Edmund actually betrays his siblings and Aslan. Eventually, as you might guess, a battle ensues between the forces of Aslan and the forces of the witch. Aslan wins completely, but he learns that the witch is planning to execute Edmund in accordance with an old law that decreed that the blood of all traitors belongs to the witch. And Edmund is clearly a traitor. There's no way around it. Well, what we've got here is a moral dilemma. Because you see, Aslan loves Edmund and does not want him to be sacrificed, but Aslan must obey the law. It's what's called in Narnia the deep magic, this idea about the traitor. And in fact, when somebody suggests to Aslan, why don't you just do away with the deep magic? He says, what? Do away with the deep magic of the emperor? That cannot be done. What can be done then? What Aslan does is offers himself as a victim in the place of Edmund. Well, the witch gleefully accepts that. In fact, I get the idea she wanted that to happen. Because if she can kill Aslan, nobody can stop her, and she'll rule Narnia forever. Well, again, she agrees to the trade, and Aslan turns himself over to the witch's powers, where he is humiliated, shaved, and murdered on a stone table with a stone knife. And the two girls, Susan and Lucy, have to watch in horror from behind a bush as this horrible murder goes on. There's nothing they can do. After all the bad guys leave, Lucy and Susan appear on the scene, and they lovingly take care of the shorn body of Aslan. They want to sort of at least take care of this dead body. After they do that, the girls begin to walk back to the camp because the battle is still going on. However, as the first ray of sun appears in the east, the girls hear a tremendous crack, and they turn around, and the stone table has cracked in half, and Aslan is gone. Then they hear a sound, they turn, and on a low-lying hill, they see Aslan, who is not only alive, but fully restored. You know, the hair is back, and he's fully restored in all his glory. Then he appears to the girls and explains what happened. He tells them that although the witch knew the deep magic, she did not know the deeper magic. And here in Aslan's words is, or are, I suppose, the deeper magic.